Blog Talk Radio. Excellent. Thank you, and welcome to Tamara Patterson Lightning. Tonight, the title of the program is called Why I Love the Minister. And we will be listening a bit to the minister lectures, et cetera. So if anyone has any questions or would like to make a comment, they can push one, and I will stop the the audio, et cetera. But with that, I hope you enjoy. Peace.
Watch movies by zombies, walk the streets and it's worse. It's like y'all worship inflation, let it live and it hurts. Israel copping oil, stolen by ISIS. Hypocrites and leaderships, a honeycomb closets where my angels.
See, that would be a terrible mistake. If you're going to destroy a movement.
Rothschild claimed to be Jewish.
Not the nationality of a Jew, but Jew in terms of belief in God. And a follower of divine revelation. But was Mr. Rothschild a moral man? Here's a man that had five sons. And he sent his five sons into five countries. One son went to England. One son to France. One to Austria. One to Italy. And another remained in Germany with the father. And from these sons, and the money that these sons had, they worked and maneuvered and manipulated until they gained control of the central banks of England, France, Austria, Italy, and Germany. The control of these central banks went into the hands of individuals whose interests were not necessarily in harmony with the best interests of that nation. These privately owned central banks became the printer of the money and the extenders of credit of that particular nation. So government and politics, I wish the politicians didn't have to go. I wish the politicians didn't have to go. But I understand you're very busy. Government and politics in Europe was always controlled by the money interest. Wars were fought. And in order to fight a war, governments had to borrow money. They borrowed money from these central banks. The central banks waxed rich because they loaned money and charged interest. Then took over when one side prevails against the other. And when governments could not satisfy the indebtedness, then some of the natural wealth of that country flowed to the bankers. They would loan money to both sides in the conflict because they really didn't care who won or who lost. I mean, it's hurtful, but a Jew, Rothschild, loan money to Adolf Hitler. A Jew. Rothschild. God damn it, you better not open your mouth to call me no anti-Semite. Did you know that 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons? Now, I'm going into your secrets for a minute. Not you, Black Mason and Shriner. You don't have any secrets. It's the white Masons and Shriners that we're going to expose in a minute. And listen to this. At least 9 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence were Freemasons. George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, James Monroe, John Jay,
John Hancock, Paul Revere, John Paul Jones, and James Otis. Later on in 1870, out of Freemasonry came a higher order of Masons called the Shriners. Now, the difference between Masons and Shriners is that to be a Shriner, you must be a Master Mason in good standing. Now, those of you who don't know anything about this, just hold your seats. I'll get back to you in a second. A Shriner belongs to the ancient Arabic order of the nobles of the mystic shrine. But wait. What kind of language is that? And all their temples or mosques are named after cities like Mecca, Medina, Syria, Aleppo. These are all part of the Muslim world. So Arabic is in their name to describe the nobles. And a noble is a hereditary class that has special social political status in a country or state. And all white Shriners have an exalted or noble political and social status in America and nations throughout the world. Now they talk about this mystic shrine, meaning that there's some mystery attached to the shrine itself. And what is a shrine? It's a sacred place of worship associated with a holy person or a holy event, a container for sacred relics such as the bones of a saint, the tomb of a holy place, person, or other revered figure. Well, who is the saint that is entombed in the shrine? Oh, boy. Who is that holy person whose bones are in that shrine? It's not just the bones of an architect of King Solomon's temple. No, that's cheap stuff. What is entombed in the shrine are the bones of those who are connected to the originator and with him are the architects of that which you call universe and all therein. Now, this holy person is now entombed in mystery, meaning that there's a secretive knowledge of that tomb that is only given to those who are master masons. These people are called Muslim Shriners or Muslim sons. We get a question in our lesson. Why does Muhammad make the devil study from 35 to 50 years before he can call himself a Muslim son and wear the greatest and only flag of the universe? Why must he add a sword on the upper part? Oh, yeah, there it is. But make it big, man. Let the people see what I'm talking about. Now, you have to remember, this question is put to us by Master Farad Muhammad. Yes. And if you notice, all the Shriner temples, you see that crescent? That star with a sword over it. You think they don't know Islam? Well, now, if you look at this, this sword is over it, meaning that any time that any Shriner reveals the secret of what's in that tomb, they would pay with their lives.
Rothschild and Paul Warburg loaned money to Hitler. Hitler killed little Jews while Rothschild and Warburg stayed in the finest hotels in Europe. But damn it, if you can't call Rothschild anti-Semitic and Warburg an anti-Semite, then don't you open your mouth against me. In a book titled None Dare Call It Conspiracy by Gary Allen and Larry Abraham, on page 45, the question is asked, where do governments get the enormous amounts of money that they need? Most, of course, comes from taxation. But governments often spend more than they are willing to tax from their citizens, so governments are forced to borrow. The public is led to believe that the government borrows from the people through savings bonds. Actually, only the smallest percentage of the national debt is held by individuals in this form. Most government bonds, except those owned by the government itself through its trust funds, are held by vast banking firms known as international banks. For centuries, there has been big money to be made by international bankers in financing governments and kings. Such operators, however, are faced with certain thorny problems. We know that smaller banks operate to protect themselves by taking collateral. But what kind of collateral can you get from a government or a king? The process through which one collects a debt from a government or a monarch is not a subject taught in the business schools of the universities. And most of us, never having been in the business of financing kings or governments, have not given the problem much thought. But there's a king financing business. And to those who can ensure collection, it is a lucrative business. An economics professor named Stuart Crane notes that there are two means used to loan governments money to governments and kings, and two means of collecting on that money. Whenever a business firm borrows big money, the creditor obtains an influence in management to protect its investment. Like a business, no government can borrow big money unless that government is willing to surrender to the creditor some of its sovereignty. Certainly, international bankers who have loaned hundreds of billions of dollars to governments around the world command considerable influence in the policies of such governments. But the ultimate advantage, listen to this, that the creditor has over a king or a president is that if the ruler gets out of line, the banker can finance his enemy or his rival. Therefore, if you want to stay in the lucrative financing business of kings and governments, it is wise to have an enemy or a rival waiting in the wings to unseat every king or every president to whom you lend money. If the king doesn't have an enemy, you got to be able to create one.
Well, what is the secret of the ancient Arabic order of the noble of the mystic shrine? It is you. It is your destiny. It is your future. It is your origin that has been kept a secret from you, but was known by the founding fathers of this country and known by the present day rulers. Now, I want you to listen good. Elijah Muhammad said, you are the direct descendants of God Himself. I'm going to say it again. You are the direct descendant of the originator of the heavens and the earth, and you are the natural Khalifa of God Himself. Listen, listen. It is Arabic they use, because Arabic is the original language of the Asiatic black man. This black man, direct descendant of the originator of the heavens and the earth, and in him is the knowledge of how to build not a temple, but a new heaven and a new earth. They look at black people and know who we are. Yeah. This holy person was hit in the head by three ruffians. Jubila, Jubilo, and Jubilum. And when he was hit in the head, he was carried to the north country and buried in a shallow grave with a sprig of cassia coming up from the grave to let the world know that there's life down here. But who? Who can get up the man in the tomb? Nobody but one with a master grip. Nobody but one with a lion's paw. The Bible says there's a lion asleep in Judah. Who will wake him? No pussycat can wake up a lion. And this pussycat leadership will never wake the black man up. You're too weak in your efforts to free our people from the hand of the oppressor. Now I'm going to show you why America is in so much debt. The founding fathers of this nation said they did not want private control of a central bank, because to them, such a bank would be the detriment of this democracy. Thomas Jefferson saw a privately owned central bank as worse than an opposing army. Thomas Jefferson wanted to keep America free from those things that led to the destruction of many nations and governments in Europe. And so a privately owned central bank was unthinkable to
to the founding fathers of this nation, and therefore it was written in the Constitution that only Congress should have the right to print the money and the instruments of credit. The debt of America is so great that greater hardship is now being planned by the government for the masses of the American people in order to make America solvent. Please, you know, wake yourself up now. Come on. Come on. If you got to stand up and breathe, stand up. Stretch yourself. I'm winding this down, so come on. I don't want you to sleep now. Give me some water. Are you all right? Okay, sit down. You refreshed? Good, I am too. Let's get rolling. The great sweep in the November elections that brought the Republicans into the control of the Senate and the House of Representatives and the majority of the governor's mansion of this nation sent a message to the government that the American people are greatly disturbed over the course of this nation, and they all are seeking change. The majority of the American people may not know what change they want, but they definitely desire change for the better. The Republican Party has come up with a theme. They call it a contract with America. This contract or agreement is to reform the government in such a way where great amounts of money can be saved, spending is to be brought in line, taxes are to be reduced. But this contract with America, to many seems, in gangster terminology, to be a contract on America, where the contract says the poor and the weak must be eliminated. There is no way that the Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, or Senator Doe, or the Republican Party can solve the problem of the tremendous debt of this nation without exposing the root of this problem and the conspiracy that brought America to her wretched debtor condition. Every home needs a balanced budget. A balanced budget means that we do not spend more than we take in or have debt greater than our ability to handle without overborrowing that will destroy the economy of our homes. Serious financial problems are at the root of most of our domestic quarrels. The tremendous stress on the breadwinners in the American family is such that this stress leads to spousal abuse. Women abusing the men abusing their wives, the abuse of the children, the breakup of the family. So balancing the budget at home is one of the keys to a stable family environment. Since this is so in individual homes, it is also true in the larger context, the country, the nation. The nation called America is going toward $5 trillion in public debt. This debt is so great that in order to balance the budget, such drastic cuts have to be made that the poor and the weak will suffer the most. So this contract with America is a contract on America's poor. Even the thought of raising the age level, at which time the elderly will receive Social Security to 70 years of age, is a sign that the Social Security of those who have paid into it is in deep trouble. the government, if it raises the age limit to 70, is betting that most of those who paid into this fund will never live to see 70 years of age, and therefore Social Security will not have to be paid. Thank you.
This one is really a metaphor. It is an allegory. It is a fable that describes something that has happened to a real person. One who is a direct descendant and has in his DNA that potential of building a new heaven and a new earth. His name is Hiram Abiff. Hiram in Hebrew means a noble one. He was a noble. He was a holy person. And in the story, they put him to death and they buried him in the North Country, North America. He's buried here. But he can be revived. The secret of Hiram is the power of the enemy through the Freemasons and the Shriners to lock down the black man and make sure that he never rises. The Masons and the Shriners, the white ones, are like that stone that was at the tomb of Jesus to keep Jesus from rising. But an angel came and rolled the stone away, and when they looked, he had risen. Keeping the secret of who the black man is was the duty of every white Mason, not the black Mason or Shriner, because you were never told that the secret was all about you. The white Masons and Shriners have always known the secret from Europe to America. In Europe, a Freemason understands the degrees and what it is to be a master mason. They know something of the African origin of civilization, the advancements in Egypt, and the great architectural genius of the black man. They learned all of that through their study of the original Bible, which had always been locked away among the aristocracy. Common people could not read the Bible. But the people rose up and wanted to know what was in that book. So King James commissioned a group of 47 scholars. Some believe included William Shakespeare, to rewrite the Bible and give it a diluted version. So that the common people who did not know science would never be able to know the truth that was hidden under allegories, metaphors, figures of speech. Think about the wisdom of the people who adulterated or changed the Bible. Think about the language and its use of allegories with the imagery of animals, birds, and fish to describe another reality. All this is to hide what is really in the scriptures. These 47 scholars knew the sciences. They knew astronomy. They knew botany, biology, zoology, chemistry, physics. They knew these things because all of the scriptures are rooted in science.
That's right. That's right.
They use language that the little man could never unravel. But in their attempt to deceive the masses, they got themselves confused. And now they don't even know what the book means. It took the coming of God to unravel its meaning for us. Otherwise, to eat it, you'll be poisoned by it. You will think you know what you know not. And you will worship that of which you have no knowledge.
You know, the president just sent a budget up to Congress of $1.6 trillion. Yet, in 1991, the last year that we have knowledge of what America took in taxes, America took in a little over $1 trillion in taxes. Which means that if the budget this year or next year is going to be $1,600,000,000,000, then where will the $600 billion come from to satisfy the budget? At this rate, if America cuts taxes and yet is increasing its budget, by the time Clinton leaves office, if he only has one term, the country will be $6 trillion in debt. At $4 trillion in debt, to pay the interest on that debt in 1991 was $288 billion, nearly one third of what the government took in taxes. If the debt reaches $6 trillion, practically every penny that comes in tax revenue will have to be paid to service the debt, which technically means that the country will be bankrupt. This condition of great debt has placed America at the mercy of those to whom she is indebted. On page 47 of this same book, They Dare Call It Conspiracy, by Gary Allen and Mr. Abraham, it reads, listen, quote, since the keystone of the international banking empire has been government bonds, it has been in the interest of these international bankers to encourage government debt. The higher the debt, the more the interest. And nothing drives governments into debt like a war. And it has not been an uncommon practice among international bankers to finance both sides of the bloodiest military conflicts. For example, during the Civil War, the American North was financed by Rothschild through their American agent, August Belmont. And the American South was financed through the Erlangers, who were Rothschild's relatives. But while wars and revolutions have been used by international bankers in gaining or increasing control over government, the key to such control has always been control of money. You can control a government if you have that government in your debt. A creditor is in a position to demand the privileges of monopoly from the sovereign. Oh man, this is heavy stuff. governments that are seeking money have granted monopolies in state banking, natural resources, oil concessions, and transportation to the bankers. However, the monopoly which the international financiers most covet is to gain control over a nation's money. Eventually, these international bankers actually owned, as private corporations, the central banks of various European nations. The Bank of England, the Bank of France, the Bank of Germany were not owned by their respective governments, as almost everyone imagined. They were privately owned monopolies granted by the head of state, usually in return for loans. Under this system, observed Reginald McKenna, president of the Midlands Bank of England. He said, quote, "Those that create and issue the money and credit direct the policies of government and hold in their hands the destiny of the people." Now, most of you think, most Americans think, that the Federal Reserve banking system is owned by the federal government as the representatives of the American people. But the Federal Reserve Bank is a privately owned banking institution. On page 59 of this same book, it reads, "The Federal Reserve controls our money supply and interest rates and thereby manipulates the entire economy, creating inflation or deflation, recession or boom, sending the stock market up or down at whim. The Federal Reserve is so powerful that the former congressman, Wright Patman, who was the former chairman of the House Banking Committee, said, in the United States, we have, in effect, two governments. We have the duly constituted government. Then we have an independent, uncontrolled, uncoordinated government in the Federal Reserve System, operating the money powers which are reserved to Congress by the Constitution. Neither presidents, nor congressmen, nor secretaries of the Treasury direct the Federal Reserve. In the matters of money, the Federal Reserve directs them." This was written about 30 years ago. Well, is it so today? Recently, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, Mr. Alan Greenspan, came before Congress to hint to the Congress that the Fed would raise interest rates again. So for the seventh time in a year, interest rates have been raised. The chairman of the board of General Motors and Ford is now seeking an audience with Mr. Greenspan to plead with him not to raise the interest rates any further. And if Mr. Greenspan agrees, this will be the first time, according to what we have read, that the Federal Reserve has agreed to sit down directly with the heads of business. The Federal Reserve sits down with the heads of government. Why would business plead to the Federal Reserve not to raise interest rates? Why couldn't Congress order the Federal Reserve not to raise the interest rates? If you watch Congress when they deal with Mr. Greenspan, And don't play with him. Because Mr. Greenspan is the representative of a shadow government that literally dictates the monetary policies of this nation.
On the wheel, and weed ain't made for smoking, just sip it when you ill. You ain't got eczema, you got parasites and candida. 16 shots, Shytown versus punk baby killers. Homicides justified because they left the guard. Pimps trap the hoes because the hoes love their rods. Fear death, live in fear, say that's life is stupid. I fear none but a law. Snatch a gun, try to use it. Y'all saying how he do it. I tell you, it was him. Put a smile on his face when I chose not to sin. Watch movies by zombies, walk the streets and it's work. It's like y'all worship inflation. Let it live and it hurt. Israel copping oil, stolen by ISIS. Hypocrites and leaderships, a honeycomb closet where my angels.
See, that would be a terrible mistake. If you're going to destroy my movement for some money. That's your burial issue.
After book one came out, I had a meeting with several Jewish rabbis, columnists, at the home of a rabbi and one who was the former dean of rabbis in Chicago was present, and also present was the great columnist for the Chicago, I think it's the Tribune, Cupsinet, and others. And at that meeting, we had dinner. It was very lovely. You know, I mean, everybody was very nice, and I was nice too. And I'm never not nice. I treat everybody the way I want to be treated. However, after dinner, or during dinner, pardon me, the rabbi pulled out of his pocket a piece of paper and said, well, of course, this is a love fest, but it's going to be tough love. And he said, this is what we expect of you if you want to be our friend. Many people, when they get to a certain level and they get an offer that is difficult to refuse because it's accompanied by a threat, they usually cave in. So this offer of friendship had terms. And these are the terms. One, Farrakhan, we need to watch you and listen to you over a protracted period of time. In other words, I'm on trial. I mean, just think of the arrogance that a black man who speaks truth to power will be on trial for a protracted period of time before I can gain their friendship. The second term. Was. This book. The secret relationship between blacks and Jews is a great calumny against our people.
We want you to stand up and denounce this book. Third, no man in history, no one in history has ever been written of well who was an enemy of the Jewish people. You're very brilliant. You're a very gifted speaker. But if you want to be written of in history well, you have to go down in history as the friend of the Jewish people. Now, Mr. Farrakhan, you can answer now, or we can go upstairs and have some coffee and tea, and you can answer then. I said, let's go upstairs and have some coffee. It started the conversation with, you have your truth and we have ours. I recorded that. So we had coffee. Are you prepared to answer now? I said, yes, I was prepared when you asked the question. I said, first, I would like to be your friend. I said, that's why I'm here. I said, but you wanted to watch me and listen to my words and follow my deeds for a protracted period of time. Well, I respectfully say to you that your people have done more evil to mine than we have done to you. So maybe we need to watch you for a protracted period of time. Watch your words and your deeds before we even desire to be a friend. I want you to hear this. Second, you asked me to denounce this book. I said, I'll denounce it in the morning. Because if it's false, if it's all lies, I don't want falsehood and lies attached to my name. But we only quoted Jewish historians, scholars, and rabbis. So if you want me to denounce this book as a calumny against the Jewish people, since we quoted only your people, then you stand up tomorrow and denounce every scholar that we have quoted and say that they are anti-Semitic. I said, now, I'm here because I want to be your friend. But if being your friend means that I have to deny the truth, then yours is a friendship I don't need, and yours is a friendship I don't want. I said, now you can gather all your forces. I want you to listen to me. This was spoken over 10 years ago with witnesses that are present here. I said, you can gather all your forces and come against me. I said, but as long as I stand on truth and stand with God, I'll be the winner. And I said, you can use your influence with the government and come against me. But as long as I stand on truth and stand with God, I'll be the winner over the government of the United States of America. When I walked out, I knew the stuff was on. They weren't going to back down from what they wanted from me, and I certainly was not going to capitulate. So I wrote in my letter to Mr. Foxman that rabbis presented me with terms that no self-respecting man would submit to.
Okay, thank you. That was our beloved minister. As always, I love the minister. He just, wow. Just such a beautiful, beautiful person. It's so beautiful. So we have like 15 minutes before I end this program. We've been listening to the minister. Tonight, I just want to dedicate my love for the minister. It was a personal thing. But nevertheless, I thank those for who are tuning in, and I pray to Allah that you definitely receive something of greatness and inspiration. For those that may like to make a comment, you may at this time. If not, then I want to continue to listen to the minister to the end of the program. So let me see, do I have any callers that may want to make a comment or so? If not, I will continue the program.
This is kind of the warm season to be coming back here.
Phoenix is, I'm getting to like Phoenix. And since I have brought the home out here, I like Phoenix and some seasons of the year better than I like Chicago. And there's nothing for me to do but to go home. So this is my home.
Very good. Which would you call your real home, Chicago or Phoenix now?
Well, either one is my real home.
Yeah. Home wherever
either,
you are.
Either one is my real home. As there's an old saying, go everywhere I hang my hat is my home, sweet home.
You have been discussed quite a bit in the news lately, ever since your organization's convention in Chicago several weeks ago. Since the death of Malcolm X, have you encountered any serious trouble, or do you expect any serious trouble?
I have not encountered any serious trouble, and I don't expect to account with any serious trouble from Malcolm's death.
Do you?
This death of Malcolm, God himself had something to do with that. And I think the people will learn that this was some work of God himself.
Do you feel possibly something that Malcolm brought on himself then?
Well, he did bring all of it on himself. If he had stayed with us, following me, he would not have been dead today. He would have been a living man today. I believe Malcolm knew these things. But in fact about it, he being all fired for self, and as all jealous leaders meet with some such kind of fate one day or another. And so he was all fired for going for himself, as he said. And going contrary to the truth by telling other than the truth, it don't bring a person to no good end. So Malcolm met with just what he preached.
You feel then possibly he was more interested in serving his own interests than a cause?
Well, I believe that he really wanted to be that which God had not made him to be.
The period since your organization's gathering in Chicago, a great deal has happened, both in regard to your organization and a great many racial organizations. A lot of segregationists nowadays, including the Ku Klux Klan, say that organizations like the NAACP and CORE are filled with communists. What do you think of this charge? Have you an opinion on this?
I don't know anything about communists. I never was one myself. Don't expect to be one. And therefore, I can't say anything about another man's belief and even his practice if it's something other than what I have. I can't say anything about it unless it involves a crisis with the truth. Then I go to work to try to defend that truth that I believe in and that I preach. And as far as the segregation and the Ku Klux Klan preachings, teachings, they are an old organization that has been, according to history, they date way back. They're still here. Whether the government liked them or not, I have nothing to do with that. But I know I cannot be classified as one myself. I'm not a Ku Klux Klan myself. And segregation, I don't believe in segregation. I think that according to prophesied scripture, which we have with us in Bible and Quran, I think, excuse me, I think we are at a time of complete separation. We cannot expect to live here with you and look for you to support us after you have educated us enough, or rather given to us enough education to do something for ourselves. And as the world is narrowing, as the world knows, it's getting a little narrower and narrower. And I think every nation should look forward for itself to try to hang on a piece of this old world in the sun, and not to be fighting and quarreling with each other all the time over the other spot.
Within themselves or among themselves?
Uh-huh. Within and among themselves, I don't think it's necessary. If we would do just a bit of justice and just say, you are justified to live in the sun here somewhere on the earth, and I will help you to try to get a place somewhere where you can live in the sun, as others, and that's vanish all argument, dissatisfaction, disagreement, and evil thinkings of nations. If we would be let alone by doing the thing that is right, every nation go to its own. As is predicted in the Bible, that the time that will come that God will force all nations to go to their own. And I don't think that time is too far distant. And so the so-called American Negro, which are really the lost and found members of the Nation of Islam, the religion of God, which means entire submission to his will, who has been here for 400 years, serving the white man of America's will. And now he has become to think in terms of the white man's thinking. He thinks now that he should be part of the white man. He should be, he should share equally in everything the white man has. This kind of ideal brings us to a very serious, point. It is bound to bring on bloodshed and death. If such thinkings are carried into practice, are forced into practice, it only will mean the slaughter of each other. Because this can't be done like that. We originally didn't have nothing in America, not even our shadow. And I think we should move forward and trying to get ourselves placed back with our own ether somewhere on this earth where we can be alone to ourselves, build whatever civilization we want to build. Let it be free for us to build that type of civilization. If it's digging holes on hillsides, or if it's making mud houses in some sluice, or some muddy pond. Whatever we like, we should be let alone and do that. And this stops all of this dissatisfaction, death dealing with each other, which is going to end up in a wholesale world thing.
You see no other course but that.
I don't see no other course but a whole entire world slaughter of man.
Which is a horrible thing to think about.
It is a horrible thing to think of, but I do have prophets' predictions that such thing could take place and will take place if we pursue the course that we are pursuing now. For 22 million so-called American Negroes who originally was brought into the Western Hemisphere by the white man to do his service and not to do our service. They have served that time out, and now it is no need for the white man nor for the so-called Negro to sit down at no such thing as a conference table to try to bring up some kind of agreement to live together and share together whatever is here. There's about 9 white men out of 10 that will not agree with no such agreement that the Negroes share equally with them, nor even have any social equality with them.
Do you feel there are that many who would feel that way?
I believe there's 9 out of 10, frankly. But if you can get 100 out of every 1,000, that will agree as this kind of a thing. What I mean by this kind of a thing, the government trying to force the Negro into his society and the Negro trying to force himself in the white man's society. Mm-hmm. This don't mean nothing but a revolution. You're not going to stand for a lot of that yourself. I would not want it, my number one. Let the nation look at each other as a nation and the fundamentals of the nation that they are involved with. Number two, let us deal with each other on the basis of justice and truth. Truth and justice, if carried into practice, could settle the whole conflicting world today.
Do you feel there's not much chance of justice or truth triumphing?
It's not none but the defeat of the civilized world. Justice and truth is the last thing to resort to or use whenever they have exhausted every means that they have of their own corrupted ideals for peace. Then they probably will turn to justice.
To that.
That is, if any be left.
They will, as a last resort, turn to that which they should have turned first. Then.
At first, and then it would have saved rivers of blood.
May I ask a couple of other questions, slightly off the subject now? In relation to Phoenix again, while you were in Chicago, I understand some shots were fired in your home by apparently someone who does disagree with you. How do you feel about that kind of thing? Does it bother you?
Oh, that does not worry me at all. These things could be aimed at my head, for as that concerned. I don't expect anything like total friendship, but I do expect men of education, men of civilization, men of reason, science, men of truth and understanding of truth, that they should not be classified with no such acts themselves.
You feel men of truth or honor would not do this kind of
they
thing?
They will not do such thing. This is savage. To have any home shot at or bombed in civilized America today with four fine institutions of learning throughout the country and educating and civilizing people in foreign countries. For such thing to happen, it is disgrace.
I think most people would agree with that. Don't you find that so, that most people would share that view, at least?
I think all civilized men will.
The problems in America over the past few years have resulted in things like the problems in Selma, Alabama, Montgomery, all through the South. Do you feel that these incidents accomplish anything?
I don't see where they have accomplished anything but the fights that they have.
Getting people hurt.
Getting people hurt and disgraced.
Have
That's the only thing that I can see in such movements as going, marching on people and trying to force yourself. The base of it is forcing yourself on people that you're not wanting. And in such way that no one would accept you in that way of forcing or even appealing for. I think the so-called American Negro, who is my brother and I'm part of him, I think we should first do this. After being enslaved for the last 300 or 400 years, I think we should prepare ourselves and be fitted, qualified to as people to accept us as their equal or to accept us as a member of their society. I think we should qualify for such place first. That means cleaning up ourselves internally and externally as well.
Do you feel that if there's any such thing, the average American Negro, if there's any such thing as an average, do you think that he wants to do this, or do you think he feels like maybe he's defeated and there's no use trying?
Well, I must go back here to Ezekiel and the Bible of the dry bone, which represents our people as we are. It said the hope was lost and that they was cut off from their part.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is very true if we look at that prophesied, and that they actually feels hopeless, and they know no place but the place that they was born in and has been in and felt crushed as a crushed people. And they begin to realize that they has been crushed and is still held as a crushed people.
Do you feel that, excuse me, sir, since we're nearly out of film again, do you feel that your organization is taking steps or can take steps to help eliminate or solve this situation, the feeling of hopelessness?
We are absolutely doing just that. I don't think we should use the word that do you think, but I have examples.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, for the world.
Thank you for listening. Peace and love. Afro-American.